Let's roll. This is Countercharge, your podcast for all things Kings of War. Join your hosts Rob Fanoff and Mark Zielinski as they delve into the world of Mantica and bring you in-depth coverage of all things Kings of War.
Welcome to Countercharge. I'm Robert Brandon.
I'm Mark Zielinski.
And I'm Rob Fanoff. Well, tonight we're here to review the Siege of Augusta, but just as normal, we need to get around the room and find out what everybody's been up to. Robert, why don't you kick us off? What have you been working on lately?
Well, we just finished the siege, and so before that, I'd been working on some terrain and stuff like that to round out the tables, but now I'm returning my attention to trying to get some armies together for the upcoming season. I've got two I'm working on right now. I've been playing Abyssal Dwarves in local tournaments, and they're working pretty well, so I'm going to try to finish that out for the U.S. Masters, and then I think my goal for next year is to try to get a Trident Realm army on the table, especially given some of the changes I've heard about in the upcoming rule book.
Yeah, I think the Trident Realms, I mean, they were already a really cool army. I think with some of the tweaks that they've given to some of the other units, I think it's going to be a really fun and actually viable army to play.
Yeah.
What's got you excited about the new rules for the Trident Realms?
I've just seen a few things posted on Facebook. Placoderms with ensnare added to them, I think, is what I saw the last week on Facebook. Defense 6 with ensnare sounds like a pretty solid bunker to build the army around.
Absolutely. And for those that, by the time you're hearing this, we will have posted our episode over the book, covering the book with Nick Williams a week ago. So I'm sure if you've already... Mark, what have you been working on?
Oh, well, my hobby bursts have continued, so I'm excited about that. I am working on assembling my forces of nature for the upcoming Army in a Weekend Spectacular, so I'm very happy about that. Got five more salamanders tossed together, and I'm actually not putting the shield arms on this time. I'm going to try, painting them in, sub-assemblies, right, which I don't do normally, but I'm going to, put a little piece of poster putty, where the arm joints go when I go ahead and prime the models, so they'll be ready to go when I paint them in the sub-assembly. So it'll be tricky for me, but, I was big debate on whether or not I wanted to speed paint or do that. I think I could speed paint with the sub-assembly, so I'm going to try it. I've never done it before, so I'm going to give it a whirl. You know what? I think in the misty past I might have, but I haven't done it in a long time, so I'm going to give that a try. And then, of course, getting the guys ready for assembly. I gave a nice bath to a bunch of more parts. So my last unit of Forest Shamblers took the dip. Karis and Charlotte got it. Won't use Charlotte as Charlotte, though. She'll be a druid. I got the Centaur Chief, and I found a Reaper's Bone Centaur banging around the house, so I threw her in there, too. And then, what the heck, I washed up the dwarf sharpshooters I received for Christmas from Hobby Claw, so I'm going to throw them together, too. So, damn my hobby ADHD. I mean, I'm just all over the place. So, and the other thing I need to do is get some bases in the house. So I got to get some MDF bases. I just haven't figured out where to get them from yet. So I just haven't had time for that one. But working on it.
I was just going to say bases. I think warbases.co.uk seems to be the one that everybody goes to quite regularly.
I'm thinking about doing a combo, with the MDF and then with the steel on the base, with the magnets and the MDF bases to snap them on so you could build the difference. If I'm using it as a regiment, I don't need it, but I just need them for hordes, So
absolutely.
I'm not going to break it down as far as troops, I don't think. Maybe for the cav, but, I don't have any cav in the Force of Nature Army, so...
Yeah, large infantry and cavalry units that you probably use as a troop, it's best to break it down.
Right.
But like you said, if you have a infantry that you're only going to ever use as a regiment, well, then go ahead and put it on a regiment tray.
Yep, that's that is certainly the plan. And it only costs you one extra mini over the minimum for running a horde anyway, so that's not so bad.
One of these days we're going to get you flare up there, big guy.
So it'll be fine. It'll be fine. Hey, it's the first time I've ever done that. I've always, always, always packed my trays to the max. And even when I played Warhammer, I never used unit fillers. So I always had model for model. So this is the first time I'm moving into the minimalist aspect of life. So let's hope they don't change that in the future. How about you, Rob? We've been recording a lot lately. We haven't had a lot of time between episodes. So did you get anything accomplished? I'm sure terrain for the Masters.
Yeah, terrain. I've been working on that. I'm actually expecting two huge shipments early next week. One would be from Scenic Express. So I have everything painted, ready to go, but I've got to do a lot of flocking. So, and that would be flocking, Mark. And so I've got to get all my grasses and stuff in so I can get finished up on that. And then I'm also expecting the shipment of mats. We bought a bunch of mats, and so those are coming in as well. So once I get those, I'll start laying out the tables. And what we're going to do is for the Masters is we'll have the tables laid out, and just like NashCon, and we'll have all the terrain laid out. We'll take a picture, and people will know where to put stuff. I think this time, though, one difference I'm going to do is we put the terrain, rather than on the actual mat, we put it on like a neutral colored background. I think this time I'm going to add some lines of demarcation for, like, say, the 2 foot sections. So that'll make it easier for people to see, okay, I see this thing is in the corner, but where in the corner is it? And so kind of give them a point of reference. Other than that, you know, prize support is rolling in. A huge support came in from Broken Egg Games recently. So big shout out to them. I've already mentioned the Gamer's Grass, the Shogun Miniatures. I can't even remember. There's so much stuff pouring in. It's really hard to keep track of it all. So,
well, that's awesome. You know, maybe you can put little pieces of tape down, you know. That'll help them with the placement of the train, you know?
Yeah, that's something now that you mention it, that's true, too. That's a really neat tip that I picked up at or learned about at Alamo. Ryan actually put little stickered stars on his table. Now, he did it for a little bit different. He actually, when he put the stars down, that just indicated a spot you could place the terrain, right? The players still deploy their own terrain, but only in certain spots. But, yeah, I guess you could just put a little marker on the mat to let them know, hey, this is where this goes or where this goes.
Did Ryan use mounts for that? I wonder if the sticker or the tape would pull the finishing off the top of the mat.
That's a good point, too. That's a good point. Mark, I don't like your idea.
All right. Well, hey, I mean, there's not – you could use Post-it notes or something that don't just mar surfaces. There's something out there for you.
Yeah, the good news is that with the – when you have a picture – it seemed to work really well in NashCon. People were able to put the terrain back the way it was supposed to be. So, and if I had the lines of demarcation, you know, showing like a grid, I think we'll be all set.
There you go. Yeah, I think Lars tossed some more sample battlefields up on the website. So,
well, he actually created a generator. I think it's still the same 12 maps, but now you have a way to basically auto-generate some kind of like JavaScript running in the background. So that's kind of cool.
That is cool.
Well, let's take a quick commercial break, and on the other side, let's get to the meat of this episode, the Siege of Augusta.
Howdy, this is Mark Cox.
And this is Jeff Swan.
And this is Ryan Smith, and we are the Beer Phase Podcast.
We're three TOs from Texas, and we talk about the most important phase in Kings of War, as well as other games we play, the Beer Phase.
Hang out with us and get our thoughts on hobby, the best beer available, any gaming tactics and current events in the gaming community, as well as guest interviews from people from all over the world that have the same hobbies we do.
So grab a beer and have a laugh with us as we BS about all things wargaming. Check us out on Twitter, at TheBeerPhase, and TheBeerPhase.podbean.com, or on iTunes, TheBeerPhase, one word.
I'm Darren Parks, the People's Champion, the Prophet of Kings, and the Messiah of Mantic, and you're listening to Countercharge.
Welcome back. All right, well, we have our special guest, Robert Brandon, with us today. So, Robert, why don't you take us through the Siege of Augusta? We're all excited to hear about it.
Yeah, so it was the first Southeast Regional event of the season, and we had a pretty good turnout. We had... It depends on how you count. We had 34 players finish. We had 36 players start, and 38 different players played during the weekend. So mid-30s as far as the number of players go. It was a nice mix from the region. Last year, I felt like most of our players came from North Georgia up, and this tournament attracted quite a few players from South Georgia and Florida, so it was nice to see that part of the region joining in and getting involved in the gaming. It was at a big convention, sort of like you know, a lot of historical games and board games being played around. We had our own room off the side. I think it worked out pretty well. And overall, we've asked for some feedback and have gotten pretty positive feedback overall. The bonus scenarios were a big hit. We're already talking about next year and what we can do to improve things. So I think it was a very successful event, and people seemed to enjoy it a lot.
Fantastic. So can you take us through a little bit of the scenarios and things like that?
Sure. The basic setup for the tournament is we did just use five rulebook scenarios as kind of the core. So we had loot and pillage, we had control, we had dominate and invade. And if I had to do over, I would probably put kill back in, because as I'm watching lists get made, and as we've really in our region moved over to almost all scenario-based games, I'm seeing a lot of lists, not that it's bad or anything, but I just see a lot of skew lists kind of sneaking in to try to take advantage of the fact that we're all on scenarios. Now, they didn't win, but I think there's some opportunity for weirdness when kill is not any kind of factor of all. Some of the big ones, you know, Larry Essick brought 27 drop Twilight King list that had like 8 or 9 units of gargoyles in there, and there was a 23 drop goblin army. So people trying to just take advantage of lots and lots and lots of drops to go out there and get tokens. So that was the thing. Along with that, we had 5 bonus scenarios. We had one for capturing table quarters. We had one for capturing a rally point that was a hill off to the side. We had a couple of those that were kind of soft comp type things where you got bonus points for killing more shooting units. You got bonus points for killing more ally units. So there were 5 of those that people seemed to really enjoy. Again, I think if I were doing it over, I would take the ally one out and put one in for killing more flying monsters, because that really seems to be the thing dominating our region right now.
Oh, okay. How many scenarios did you play again? I mean, you ran through them there real quick, but I didn't count them.
We had 5.
Five games?
And then each of 5 games, and then each game had 5 bonus scenarios.
Cool. How many points was everybody running?
It was a 2,000-point tournament. We hope everybody was running 2,000 points, as far as I know. So it was a 2,000-point tournament.
Well, Rob wasn't there, so everybody was good.
Yeah, probably right.
That's good. It was just a one day, right?
It was 2 days.
2 days.
One of the feedback was, should we do 6? We did 3 on Saturday, and part of the reason for that was, you know, it's a big convention. There's a lot going on. So we wanted people to have the opportunity to go out and do some of those other games that were in the hall. We asked for some feedback, and it was split about 50-50, between people who would have preferred to see 6 games and some people who would prefer to see 5 like it was. So I can't quite figure out where to be on that. I feel like the 6-game schedule is tough to work out, because you either have 3 games in a row on Saturday or you keep people later on Sunday. I don't know. I like 6 games, but the scheduling of it seems very difficult.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Robert. I actually like 6 games gives you that ability to really do some great separation. But, you know, the beauty of 5 games is your schedule frees up so much.
Yeah, on Friday night, you know, some people did go into the hall and play some board games and get involved in some other things. Some people went out on the town. So I saw the Florida guys getting in a van to go out to the main town. Some of the rest of us went to a local pub and you know, had a good time there. So being finished earlier, I think, is nice. Although I can understand you're at a war game, you're spending your weekend playing Kings. So you if you're going to do it, you want as many games as possible. So I get the other side as well. It'll be interesting to see how all the other tournaments this year kind of deal with that gap. Do you know what the Memphis tournament's doing, Rob?
Not yet. We're actually working on it right now, and more details will be hopefully laid out very soon.
I think that's one of the big questions right now for tournaments is it going to be 5 or 6?
No, I agree with that. It is nice to have that extra time, though, you know, in the evening – and just to hang out, because I personally think tournaments are a big social thing as well. So you get your kings in, you're done. You know, that's one of the things when we were playing Warhammer was, I mean, you were burned out by the time it was time to go out and do something or have dinner or relax, you know. And after playing in Kings of War, you're done. You're ready to hit the town and, you know, or sit around, have a nice dinner and chat with everybody. And, you know, to me personally, that's as important as playing the games, because typically I'm not fighting for the top slot. So I'm there to have a good time and have some fun and provide some easy fodder for the other players in the tournament. So
I think that's true. You know, with five games, we were finished by, you know, 5:15 on Friday, and then on Sunday, 2. So, you know, you're kind of out early. I like that, but I get the other side.
Yeah, well, it makes it easier for people to travel, though, too. So, you know, if you're out early on Sunday, you know, people can go, you know, people can come in from a little further distance because you get released earlier and you're not... I remember the days I'm sweating it out till like 5 o'clock for rewards on Sunday. It's like, ah, so, you know, that is one of the really nice aspects, because that actually allows you to, you know, travel a little further to hit the tournaments. So that's very nice. So you were talking a little bit about top six in battle and things like that. What type of list did you see that were top six?
Well, the joke was made. So the way the tournament hall was set up is there were four rows of table, and then there was a top row of just two tables for the top two tables that were separate from the rest of them. And so the top five tables, there was a line kind of you could draw, and somebody made the quip that there should be a sign right there at the fifth table that said "Here be dragons," because it was really an event that was dominated by flying monsters, whether they be chimeras or dragons. So that, you know, the top six was a triple dragon list by George O'Connell, double dragon list by Keith Randall. Then you had the shooty goblin list that I thought was interesting in that it, you know, it was playing the objectives, but it was also well matched to deal with all those dragons, because it's enough shot to shoot them down. Over 200 shots, six war machines. It was really something to see. All well painted, though. You've got that many goblins on the table painted. Good for you. And that was Jeff O'Neill. Then there was another shooty list, a shooting Night Stalker list by Patrick Justice. And then we were back to double Chimera with Justin Rigdon and double Dragon with Todd Perkins. And Todd Perkins lived on table one until, you know, I think the last game. So, of the next to the last game. So, you know, it was that 3, 5, 7, 9 flying monsters in the top six list.
See, Rob, so, I need a dragon in my upcoming list for Lone Wolf. I will now turn it over to you.
Well, it sounds like there was a pretty good mix, though, of both veteran and newer players, and just a wide-ranging, you know, different lists. I mean, you had, Jeff O'Neill's, what, he had how many drops in his Goblin army?
23.
Yeah, and then you had other armies, like George O'Connell's list didn't have that many drops, right?
It was 9, you know, George O'Connell's.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's pretty interesting, a pretty interesting mix. What do you attribute that to?
Well, I think one part of it is we did have a lot of new players, a lot of people who had never played at a tournament, had just played very few games overall. So there were new players whose list kind of reflected what new players tend to do with Kings of the War's list, which is what I usually see is new players will come in and drop big blocks of hordes and infantries around. Then you had some more experienced players who were going, you know, small list, hard to kill, kind of around the idea that, you know, since kill doesn't matter, you don't have to engage. You just stay out, rush the objectives, use your breath weapons and your toughness to sweep objectives in. And then you had other players. You know, the first game of the tournament was there were 50 drops. There was a 27-drop Twi'lekin versus a 23-drop Goblin list, and the philosophy there was have so many units on the table that you can't be taken off. So it's interesting to see there are different pathways to victory in Kings. And it's interesting to see people trying to take those. But right now, it seems like, at least the way we're playing it with the scenario play, that being quick and resilient is the way to go over drops. But, you know, big drop army didn't make it in the top six. We'll see how that plays out.
Exactly. But the best part is it's just exciting, right? Because in one sense, it's fresh. Because we don't really know how this is going to end up. And obviously, we have an organized playbook coming out next month. That's going to add six new scenarios, right?
Yeah.
So, and they're tweaking some rules and stuff. So,
as far as So I think we had everything except Trident Realms there. I think every single list was, including Twilight King, which I don't think I'd seen before. I think everything was there except for Trident Realms.
So obviously we're pretty darn excited for you to have 34 players at the first event for our tournament season. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, we had 36 who started. Two people, one person got very ill after the first round, and another person had to leave. So we start with 36. I'm expecting, you know, maybe TNT or the one in Memphis to get to 50. I think we'll have a 50-person event in the Southeast this year.
I think TNT's going to hit 60.
It would not surprise me at all.
Yeah, because we've already got 5 or 6 people from other states. We have the Texas contingent coming. So I think it's going to be huge. And I think really, you know, I think all of our tournaments this year, I think we're going to see an increase, right? Because last year, the biggest event we had was NashCon, and I had 39 players. So I think every event we run this year, and for those that aren't keeping score, we have 12 on the docket this year. So, I mean, I think they're all going to increase. And, you know, one of the things I'm trying to really nail down is why are we – I mean, I played Warhammer before this, but in the Southeast, it never caught on like this is catching on. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, we weren't – I mean, even the NashCon Warhammer tournaments of old, I mean, this is like – I don't know. There's a passion that I have not seen before.
And it's really, you know, bringing in new players. We had two – I'm trying to count about my head – 3-4 players who had never been to a tournament before. And they left just as excited as can be. And I expect to see them at other tournaments. And so I think it's partly, it's a very accessible game. Warhammer was very intimidating with the rules. There was a rules mastery involved to keep people out. It was very complex on list building. You could lose. You could be completely uncompetitive on Warhammer just off list building. And I don't feel like that's the way in Kings. I think Kings, especially the way we're playing it with heavy scenarios, that even if your list isn't good, you can be competitive and in the game the whole time. And so I think people have a good experience. And I just think the community is really good. I mean, it really is. I had somebody who plays a lot of 40K tournaments tell me at the tournament, he had been playing a lot of 40K tournaments, I should say, that just the atmosphere in the room, it doesn't feel super competitive. And people are trying to win, and then they're close games, but it doesn't feel super competitive. Everybody, there's a sense of camaraderie. So it's a good community, and I think people want to be a part of that.
Yeah, it's not just here in the Southeast. Obviously, other regions are doing the same thing. You know, we're seeing the same success in many spots of the U.S. Some are growing slower than others, but I think everywhere it's coming on. So, and talk about your preparation for the tournament. You know, is there anything you did that? I mean, obviously, you must have been well prepared because you ran a great event by all accounts. Anything that you know, any tips you would give in preparing to run an event?
So we did GigaCon last August, and so we learned – that was my first Kings of War TOing experience, and so we learned a few things there. One, we needed more terrain on the boards, and so we did – these tables were pretty well covered with terrain. There were some large hills, some blocking terrain, so we tried to not only increase the amount of terrain but also the size of terrain, and that seemed to get some positive reviews. One thing we picked up on is different types of mixes of terrain are good. We used a lot of hills. We needed some more forest. As a funny thing, I don't like when I'm playing tournaments, I tend not to like to mess with obstacles. I know they're important, but they just kind of get in the way and they get knocked around. So I didn't put any obstacles out. And that was one bit of feedback I heard, that obstacles, are an important part of the game. The other part was just, you know, have a lot of communication, as you're moving forward. I tried to be on Facebook posting at least once a week, giving updates. And I think that gives people a chance to ask questions. And so the more people are aware of what's going on beforehand, I think that helps quell any problems during the event. And then otherwise it's just, you know, at the event, just to make sure. And we always just tried to stay on time and be real transparent with everything that we've done. And I think in the end, it paid off. There's always room for improvement. You learn something every time you do it. But I think those are the big things that we picked up on this time.
And what size hills did you guys use, or what height hills did you guys use?
We were using height 2, which worked well. I know some of the guys who played like Tim Smith plays Herd, and so there's not really any shooting there. You can have shooting in Herd, but he generally doesn't play shooting. And he's had some rough times at events where he's just been kind of shot up and shot up and shot up. He said this time with the large height, two hills, at least gave him one turn where he could get up and feel like he had a chance to be competitive. And he did very well at the tournament.
Yeah, I think at NashCon that was the biggest issue that I identified or feedback that we got was that we were using height one hills. And, you know, height one hills just don't – they just don't give you any cover, right? They don't break up the line of sight enough. So
and that's what we learned at GigaCon was it's not the number of pieces, because we were using 8 or 10 pieces of terrain at GigaCon. It's the size of the piece. And so we definitely went to try to increase the size of each piece. And one thing that I've never done before that seemed to help is most of the buildings we put on bases, because sometimes, you know, just like a tower or something, it's a little hard to tell exactly what is the impassable beast. So we tried to get bases under all the buildings.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's one of the things about, you know, when you're building terrain, it's sort of that mutually exclusive thing where on one side you want really, really pretty, aesthetic, awesome looking stuff. But on the flip side is you want it to be functional and playable. And there is a level of abstraction in Kings of War terrain. So you need to accommodate for that.
And that's talk to Drew Gaddy, who was the TO of the whole thing. He helped a lot with the Kings of War event. He's coming from a historical background. And so what he really wanted to do with the tables was have every table be a little different, like have one table that would be a plain and one table that would be a forest. And I think in a tournament, for me anyway, you want the tables to be fairly balanced. You don't want people to meet, come to a table and saying, oh, you know, this is completely different than every other table of the thing. So we tried to make them as fair as possible. We had two map setups that we were trying to use throughout the room.
Yeah. Speaking of like the masters, I mean, we're sort of doing that as well. I mean, we're having thematic tables where they're different, you know, themes or different looks to each table. Like one could be a volcano table and one could be a forest table, but we've agreed on, you know, we're going to have two of this. So, you know, quantity of each of the, you know, terrain types is going to be fairly consistent from table to table, even though they may look different. So you talked a little bit about the feedback, you know, so I guess when does, you know, so what do you do now for planning for next year? Because, I mean, if you had 36 this past one, you need to hit 45 next year. So what do you do now?
I think we can do that. And so first thing is, you know, talking, you know, trying to pick up on the areas where people said you can improve. And one thing, you know, people, the positive about the terrain, the quality of the terrain, but the variety of terrain. So one thing we're going to do over the course of the year is build some forest. We've already picked up the pieces. And so this is, you know, starting a year in advance almost, but picking up the pieces so we can start churning out some forests and having some more forest type pieces on all the tables are important. The second thing is, you know, the room was a little tight for 40 people. We fit pretty well, but, you know, you want some space. And so as we look to try to expand to maybe 45 or 50 players next year, looking at the venue and kind of, we've already kind of picked out a second room so that we can have two rooms to put everything in for next year. So that starts. And then otherwise it's really just going to be watching the tournaments that are coming up to see, you know, how the game develops and how the meta develops and to see what we want to do with the rules pack in the upcoming year. Do we want to add kill back in? What do we want to do with historical lists? We had two historical lists at the tournament. So, you know, are there broken lists in there? Are there things that are going to make the game less fun for the players playing straight out of the rule book? And so it'll be watching a lot of the tournaments to see how that develops. And then I want to try to get the pack and stuff out earlier this year. You know, I think it was November. If you do that a little bit earlier, I think it gives time to build momentum. I think we're in a good spot. People seem to have a good time. We're down there in that south, more southern area than some of the other ones. So I think it's I think it could be an event that the southern folks start seeing as their own.
Yeah, for sure. You know, you touched on a few things there, but one of the things we also, you know, here in the southeast, we're trying to do too, I think, is we also want each of the tournaments to differentiate themselves, right? We don't want to have 12 tournaments that are 2,000 points with the same comp pack, you know, so it's kind of nice when tournaments just do something a little different as well.
Right. I think that's right. And it's hard to find that niche. I like to think the bonus scenarios are unique for us, but we have a tournament going, 2150, and so you're seeing different point cost. It'll be interesting to see how each tournament kind of differentiates itself.
Well, let's segue a little bit. Let's talk about the Masters. What are you doing to, because for those who don't know, you made our Masters team.
I did.
You prepared? Are you prepared? Do you have your army ready? Are you excited?
I am excited. My army is not completely finished yet, but I'm in a good shape. I have maybe two more units to paint. Everything is assembled. Everything is, the basing's finished. I just got a little bit more painting to do. So I'm feeling pretty good about that. I've been playing, I made the Masters off a heavy breath abyssal list for the most part. I played one other list throughout the year, but I feel like the way things are set up right now, that list may not be as competitive as it was when the season first started. So I'm switching over to an abyssal dwarf list that I've had a lot of success with in a couple of local tournaments, and then playing, my opponent tends to be George O'Connell, which is nice because he's a very good player. So I get a lot of good testing in with my list. So I feel pretty good about that list. So just getting that together and just going to have fun, I may look at the Masters differently than other people. I know some people get really caught up in the competitiveness of the Master. I really kind of look at it more as, a way to get in there and game with some people from other parts of the country. And so it's a very kind of social event for me. I'm looking to, it's nice that it's in Nashville. We can go out in the town. So I'm looking forward to that aspect as much as the gaming.
Any predictions? How do you think we're going to do?
I think the Southeast has a strong team. I think it's going to be, I can't speak, and I've played in the South, I've played in Texas, and I have seen some of the Midwest folks come to our tournament. I don't know much about what's going on the West Coast. I don't know much of what's going on in the Northeast, but given what I've seen, I think the Southeast team can go with any of the other regions right now. I mean, we took four or five people to Lone Wolf last year, and four of us were in the top 12, so I think that speaks of our ability to play with at the top tables in this thing. I'm expecting the Southeast to win, but we'll see how it goes.
Oh, we're definitely going to win. Suck it, Texas. So let's wrap up the Siege of Augusta. One of the things we didn't touch on, let's go over the winners.
Sure.
I'll let you just run us through them all. I mean, I know there's a long list of awards, but wherever you want to start.
Sure. So one thing we did in responding to kind of some regional feedback was we tried to do some non-gaming awards. We had heard that there was a lot of, we play a lot of tournaments. You win a lot of miniatures that maybe you don't necessarily need. And so could we try some other things? So one thing we did try was the winner of day one received a gift card for dinner that night. So there was a little event at a local tavern, and the day one winner was Todd Perkins, and so he won that. And
oh no, we're never going to hear the end of this.
Todd was on. I mean, Todd got to first table in round two, and he camped there until game five. Keith Randall beat him game four. Keith Randall beat him in game four, but Todd.
Well, at least we know all is right with the world if Keith, because I mean Keith always beats Todd, right?
Keith always beats Todd, but Todd Perkins was. I mean, he has legitimately established himself as the a man at the top table over the last three or four events. So that was right. So best overall was George O'Connell. It was extremely close. If you go and look at the standings, it was 2 points in battle, maybe two or three points overall. And then you go four or five deep and they were all within 3 or 4 points. So sports voting is really what separated that overall category, but George did take best overall with a list that consisted of five regiments of tree herders five regiments of shamblers, four shamblers, a tree herder, and three dragons. And so, we looked at that at the beginning. I had actually said, I'm not so sure that's going to work. Apparently it does. And so he took down the tournament. Keith Randall was best general. He and George played on the top table in the last round, and they kind of had one of those draw games. I actually was looking, because they finished their game relatively quickly, I thought one of the third and fourth tables might potentially jump them because they did draw there on that last table. And he had a double dragon list. Same thing. Keith Randall's been running that list since NashCon, and there's no reason to change it because it's working very well. So he was best general. Best sports was Memphis's own Devlin Smith.
I'm never going to hear the end of this one. This is two awards now he's won. So he's an up and comer.
He dominated this one because he was 1 point off the maximum possible sports score. So what that means is he received, out of the five games, 4 first place votes and 1 second place vote. And so I would have given it to him too, because he was a whirlwind at taking down the terrain at the end of the game. He really, at the end of the tournament, he really helped me out a lot too. So I see why he wins those awards. He's a super nice guy. So, but Devlin won that one. And then best paint was Cody Smith out of Florida, who came up. There's some shots of his army online. It looks really good. The paint rubric for this particular tournament, I tried to simplify it. So I had some wide bands, which were simply, you know, standard GT quality, you know, basic army paint, no paint. Then there was a category for, you know, super high paint quality. And then there were some bonus points to try to reward some hobby stuff. And Cody's army came in and checked a lot of those boxes. And he had a very clear, coherent theme. He had it was a dwarf list that had a lot of, it was snowy. He had a lot of conversions. He had hand sculpted the hoods on his Rangers. And he had a few other kind of sculpted weapon swaps out. So really well put together, just kind of all around army. Had a narrative that he placed with it, a great looking board, a great looking name card. So definitely worthy of the top slot there. So that was fun. Then we gave some other awards, just sort of like achievements or something like that, just to recognize, you know, who got the most objective points and things like that. Player's Choice Best Army was Tim Smith with his herd, which has kind of become common for Tim to win something. It was interesting that the convention also had a best painted model contest Saturday night, and some of our guys went over to put their awards in, and I think we almost swept those awards. George won best regiment for an ogre unit. I think Tim might have won best monster with his Jabberwocky, so we did really well in that as well. Just shows the quality of the paint in the room. So good, yeah. Some nice armies.
What other armies did you see that you know that stood out to you? Because obviously you mentioned Cody. I've been talking to Rocky Archer, who's also down there from Florida, and I'm super excited because I'm going to be going to Crucible this year. Excellent. Well, I'm planning to be there, and I'm excited just to meet. It sounds like they have a really vibrant scene down there in Florida, so I'm excited to be part of that.
Yeah, I enjoyed both those guys. Other list, you know, I hadn't seen Jeff's Goblin list before. To me, it's just impressive to have that many goblins painted. And so they were all there, and they looked very nice.
Are you calling him old?
Oh, you think that's what it is? You just have time?
I guess. I don't know, man. That's a lot of – I mean, I saw the pictures. That's a lot of goblins.
It's a lot of goblins, and it's a lot of basing. And so he – props to him for getting that finished. Anything else that I think that we haven't seen before? No, usual suspects after that. Shannon Shoemaker's Forces of Nature, he's put a lot of work into basing. That's an interesting army in that you can see how big a deal when you're doing multi-bases the basing can be. He has all this fall foliage and things like that, that foliage that really makes a difference.
Absolutely. How about the Countercharger Award, the guy that was perfectly mediocre?
Yes, it was interesting. It was hard to figure this out because we did have the two drops, and so, you know, do you start where it ends or where it begins? So I chose to cut the award at the end of the day, and then we actually had a tie. The two people right there in the middle had the same amount of points, so we had to go into our tiebreaker system. But John Corbett from Arkansas was our countercharge award winner. He had a nice tournament. He was playing a lightning bolt heavy Night Stalker lists, and you know, he started out really strong and ran into a couple of those dragon lists, and it didn't seem to be a good matchup for his army, and he ended up straight smack middle of the pack. But I think he only lost, if I remember correctly, to Keith and Todd, who both finished really, really high. So good tournament for him. You know, the countercharge dice were really popular. I had a lot of people coming by the table saying, hey, what can I do to get those dice? So people had their eye on those things.
Well, all you have to do is give me an email at countercharge2015@AOL.com, and I'll see what I can do. We do sell them, so we do have a couple sets left for sale. So if you're interested, we've got the Vortex Green and then Ivory Color. So back to you, yep. Rob.
I was just going to say that, you know, we're running low on dice, and we're probably going to have to order some more real soon. And if you're a TO out there and you want to give out a Connor and Charger award, just reach out to us. We'll be happy to give you a certificate and some dice to give out. So
it's a good award. And it was something that people were looking at when they were that. I heard a couple people, mainly, not only, but also because they wanted those dice.
So let's talk about you. What's next in the docket? I've obviously got Masters next month. What's the rest of the year hold for Brandon?
So, you know, I go to a lot of tournaments, I do. And so, you know, the Masters is definitely the next one. I know I'm going to be there. I'm looking at, my goal would be to get to all the Southeast events. I don't know that I'm going to make it. Manicon is a tough one because it's the week after the Masters, and I'm not sure that I can swing two back-to-back weekends. But otherwise, I'm trying to get to them all. I'm really making a commitment to get down to Crucible because I want to, you know, I feel like they came up to support my event. I want to get down there to support their event and also just kind of keep that flow of players back and forth strong. So I want to be there at Crucible. I always like to go to one out-of-region event. I went to Lone Wolf last year and had a great time. I'm looking at, you know, talked to Shannon Shoemaker this weekend. I'm looking at Lady of the Lake, maybe. I think it's in Minnesota in July as my out-of-region event for this year. So I've put that on as a strong maybe. And, you know, just try to play some different armies and maybe try to get to 8, 9, 10 tournaments and have another good year. I don't know that I'll make the Masters this year. I'm looking at the Southeast region and it's really competitive now.
Yes, it is. You know, you said a couple things there, but one of them is, you know, if you're a TO in an event, the most important thing you can do is go to other people's tournaments, right? Because, I mean, it's all about networking and getting the word out about your tournament. And the best way to do that is to go to other people's events. And also, you learn from, you know, the way somebody's doing their event, the mistakes they make or the something they did that was great. And so, I find going to tournaments is awesome for a number of reasons, not just playing King's War.
Right. You're exactly right. It's just like Mark was just saying, it's a very social thing. And so you want to build those connections. And that's how the scene grows, is people who connect to other people and want to be part of that.
Yeah, so we've got Masters, obviously, is in February, and then that's followed up by March. And was it March 3rd through 5th?
Is Manicon.
Manticon.
Which is great. Manicon is at Henry Horton State Park, which is it's not far off the interstate there near Nashville, but it is really a beautiful setting to have. It's not like being in a hotel. It's not like being in a game store. You're in a lodge at a state park, nature's all around. It really is a nice place for a tournament. It's Gavin does, you know, he's a very kind of hobby oriented player. And so his tournament is a very hobby oriented tournament. So it is a nice, it does have a nice feel. I'd love to get there if I could.
Yeah. And they attract some people from like West Virginia and Ohio that we're not going to see at a lot of our tournaments. So that's cool too, because you get a different mix of people. And then in April, we've got Crucible, April 1st through 2nd in Orlando, Florida. That's being run by Hunter Masters. I'm looking forward to this one. Like you said, this year we kind of we're hoping to see Florida kind of come more into the fold with the Southeast community. And obviously, Siege of Augusta took a big step towards that. I'm doing my best to get, you know, these guys from Florida maybe to come up to TNT, maybe another tournament. So looking forward to going down there for that. And then in May, we got, you know, TNT. And Todd and I have big plans. That's all I'll say. I'm expecting this to be a very good sized tournament. It is at the same venue that we're hosting the U.S. Masters, so it's real close to downtown. It's a great venue.
He had the prize at Siege, which is, I mean, just in my opinion, kind of the premier top prize out there. It's the TNT wrestling belt. So you get your hands on a wrestling belt if you go down there. And I think he has a couple of wrestling belts to give away this year. So
absolutely. It's taken up just where Nash Con left off last year. It's got a wrestling theme. And so how many of those belts do you have, Robert? You have a few of those, right?
I think there are only three people who have belts right now. And I've got one of them. I think the three were me, followed by Daniel Furbush, followed by Paul Lester last year. So I think there are only three. So it's a small group right now, but they're nice rewards. It's one of my favorite rewards I've gotten.
Yeah. And then in June, we're set up to do Blue City Brawl here in the Memphis area. We're still working on it. We're toying around with some different ideas to really make it set it apart. you know, so there's more details coming on that. And then in July, we've got the American Team Championships in Cleveland, Tennessee. GigaCon also in July. And then in September, we've got Sword of Kings over Labor Day weekend. I am definitely looking forward to this one. I missed it last year. I can't wait to get up to Elizabethtown and hang out with those guys. And again, that's another event where you're going to get people that aren't at any of the other events. So one of the biggest things I love about going to different tournaments is playing new people. And this is going to give me that opportunity. Skirmish Supremacy, September 29th through October 1st in Atlanta, Georgia. Redstone Rumble, you know, we kind of close out the year, give out some hardware there. And in November, you know, Nathan Clevenger and Justin Rigdon, they're working on something. We're tentatively calling it The Forge. It's scheduled for November. So, hey, I'm looking forward to something in November. Usually November is a dead month for me. So it'll be nice to do something.
Really, I think something every month, right?
Except for December. Yeah. Yeah, it's a packed year. Obviously I miss Siege, but I would like to go to maybe 9 of these. You know, I'd like to get to as many as I possibly can. It's going to be tough because, you know, just like you, I've got children and I've got responsibilities and so there's a limit to what we can do, right?
We give a regional award for the person who attends the most events. What do you think the over-under on that's going to be? Where do you think get off?
Yeah, we had, what, 6 events last year? And I think Justin and Todd tied, didn't they? With 5.
Yeah.
If we end up with 12 events, which is where we're sitting right now, I'm going to say Todd's going to come in. He's going to do 10 of these events. That's my prediction.
I think Todd will do 10. Do you think Justin will go to 10? You think
Justin's going to do 9.
Justin will do 9. All right.
Yep. He's not gonna have the level of commitment to Todd's, because Todd's just a different breed of crazy.
That is true. That is true. And of course, now he's got wartime hobbies, so he travels around. I mean, it's work. He can write that off as work, I guess.
I mean, he's living the dream because he has a built-in excuse. He can just say, "Cindy, we got to go because we got to run the store."
That's right. It's work.
So yeah, it's perfect.
He's a genius. I should have thought of that.
I think it's too much work, but yes, it is a great, great plan. So Robert, what else is on your docket? What else do you want to talk about?
I think I've covered everything. I hope people will be looking at the Siege the same weekend next year. I hope people will put that on their calendar. If you didn't come this year, I feel like you missed a good event. So come on down and join us next year.
Do you guys have a date yet for next year?
It'll be the same. It'll be Martin Luther King Jr. weekend. It'll stay connected to the Wargaming Convention. So,
and you know what I just thought about? You know, if we didn't have International Campaign Day the same day, we probably could have had at least 3 or 4 more people. Probably.
It'll be interesting to see how that works out. I think that did cost us a couple of a few people, and it, you know, people wanted to participate in that at Campaign Day, even at the tournament. That is an issue, but we're kind of tied with the convention. So when the convention is, that's when we'll be, and we'll see where the Campaign Day is next year.
Well, awesome. Hey, Robert, we really appreciate you coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Excellent. Well, that's going to do us tonight. And until next time, keep countercharging.
Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on Countercharge. Please let us know what you thought of the show by emailing us at counterchargepodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at countercharge15, or by posting on our episode thread on the discussion forum found on manticgames.com. If you enjoy the show, you can help others find out about it by leaving positive reviews on iTunes. Until next time, keep countercharging. Music is a composition of Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under Creative Commons.